We wouldn't be able to keep this archive going without your support. Donate online today at WYXR.org.
YXR 91.7 Memphis.
Welcome once again to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. We're coming to you tonight from the Powerhouse Arts Center in downtown Oxford, Mississippi. Thank you. Welcome to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. As I mentioned, we're at this beautiful Powerhouse Arts Center, a stone's throw from the Oxford Square. Big show for y'all tonight. Pulitzer Prize winner Jane Smiley is here. We also have Ethel Morgan Smith, her beautiful book about the Civil Rights Movement, Path to Grace. Chelsea Lovett is here, I believe originally from Hattiesburg, spent some time in New Orleans, now lives in Nashville. She sounds like Bob Dylan when she sings, Only Better. Which, how could it be any other way, right? And, of course, our old pals Bill and Shy Perry will be doing their tribute to their late father, Hal and Mad Perry. So it's a full lineup, y'all, with the Big Thacker Band here. Y'all please welcome them to the stage, the Yalla Bushwhacker Big Band.
Against my window, bringing back sweet memories.
Used to
the Bushwhacker Big Band, y'all. One more time for him. Jeremy Clinton back there, Slade Lewis, Keon Love, Calvin Flynn helping us out up front. We got this great horn section. Doug Thomas, Michael Worthy, and Brandon Lewis, and also helping us out up front, the beautiful sounds of Mary Frances Messy. How about it? They'll be back later in the show. That Ann Peoples song, that's a great Memphis sound. I Can't Stand the Rain. And for those of you who have forgotten what rain is, it comes from the sky. It's liquid. We haven't had any in them, forever. But we're not going to complain. Paul Tate's getting all the rain in Ireland. That's what's happening over there. All righty, our first guest, y'all, is Ethel Morgan Smith. Her book is called Path to Grace, Reimagining the Civil Rights Movement. It is from University Press of Mississippi. And as Bruce just reminded me, she won for this book the Eudora Welty Prize of 2023. That is a nice prize to get. The book is really wonderful in that it takes interviews from some of the unsung heroes of the civil rights movement and intersperses it. Ethel has some of her growing up tales with some of the people she grew up with, interspersed with it, so you get the whole story. It's really wonderful, beautifully done, and as we mentioned, it has a particularly beautiful cover. Y'all please welcome Ethel Morgan Smith. John Canty, who worked in the White House and got up into the mail room, and he was the man who decided what pieces of mail went to the president's desk.
You can imagine that job doesn't exist today.
Right. Apparently not.
Yes. Mr. John Canty of Somerton, South Carolina. He was the first person I interviewed whom I knew nothing about. And when I interviewed him, he was very nervous, but he soon relaxed and just told his story. And he worked at the White House for 18 years. He started with President Nixon and worked through the Reagans. So when you're interviewing people, it's their story. That's one of the most important things you have to remember. It's not my story. So he cried twice when I talked to him. One was that his wife had died within the last 2 years that I interviewed him, and they had no children, and they were very close. And then he cried again when he talked about President Nixon. And I write in the book, I didn't know whether to be shocked, surprised, or to cry. But anyway, but you know what? It was his story, and he gave me information that we don't know about. For an example, he told us that Nixon was one of the only presidents who knew their names, gave them the highest raises than anybody. He also told them they could come to him personally if they needed something. So we don't think much about radios and televisions and sofas during the 1970s, but that was a big deal to them. And Mr. Canty said he had a way of defending Nixon. He said he was a good president. He just brought up too many young people who wanted to make a name for themselves. And in that process, they ruined him. That was his take on it.
Oh, so that's what happened.
Yes, that's right.
I did find it interesting, and we'll let you read here, that Nixon, like you said, moved sofas in there and TV and radio for them. And then Carter came in and said, they don't need all that. It'll take away from their work. And he pulled the TVs out and all and the radios and really didn't know their name. And I would have thought it would almost be just the opposite. I revere President Carter, but that kind of got to me, man. Let him have a television set. Come on.
But you have to take into consideration, when he came into the White House, there was an energy crisis.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yes. He's wearing sweaters and all that. I remember.
Well, but, my parents didn't buy the remix of the sweaters. My grandmother said, well, I was cold when I was a child. I'm certainly not going to be cold as an adult. I'm going to put that sweater on. But it was an energy crisis, so we should give him credit for that. He was trying to control that.
All right, fair enough. Again, there's Shirley Chisholm. Some of y'all remember Representative Shirley Chisholm, first black woman to run for president. There's a chapter, great chapter on her. Nikki Giovanni, which I wish we had more time to talk about, who was on the show last year. And, man, is she a delight. What a firebrand. She's in her 80s now.
Nikki Giovanni just turned 80 years old. I went to graduate school when I was 37 years old in Roanoke, Virginia. and I was unpacking, and I heard this voice on the radio, and I go, I know that voice. It's so familiar. And in the end, the journalist said, we'd like to thank Professor Nikki Giovanni from Virginia Tech, poet, writer, et cetera. And I go, oh, my God, that's 40 miles from me. So I wrote her a letter. I write lots of letters. So anyway, she wrote me back and invited me to come to Virginia Tech. That was my first job out of graduate school. We started the Black Studies program, which has thrived and has continued to thrive. Nikki Giovanni and I have been friends for more than 35 years. And she is a mentor, but without mentoring you. She's a mentor because she lives her life the way that she wants to live her life. She lives her life in freedom. That's wonderful. That's a wonderful way to live your life. She is a friend, but most importantly, she is a sister. To me, and she just came to Birmingham to help me do a launch for my book.
And for this book?
Yeah, for this book.
Oh, man.
That was in September.
I bet that was wonderful.
That was great. And at the end of the party, Nikki says, I need a drink. So we put 5 glasses of champagne in front of her. It's a great picture. And she goes, I really need a drink. But she is funny. She is honest, but she is always herself. She does not apologize for being herself. I have so much respect for that. It's such a wonderful way of being in the world.
Yeah, you mentioned in the book that late in life, Nikki Giovanni went blonde,
yes.
At that time, probably a 70-year-old whatever black woman with very close cropped hair and goes blonde, and a lot of her friends kind of looked askance. And she didn't tell anybody, you knew, but
I
she
knew.
Had been diagnosed with lung cancer and took treatments and I think sort of got past it, but wanted to make herself feel better. So she said, doggone it, blonde hair. And
well, that's exactly
world
right.
World be damned. You
well,
got to love her.
Mm-hmm. And it was February of 1996. And I remember it well because we hadn't talked to each other over the holidays, you know, like what we had done and what was going on. And I got a phone call and she says, we were talking, how you doing? She says, I've been diagnosed with lung cancer. And I was shocked. I was living in West Virginia, so I knew lots of lung cancer doctors. So I didn't know what questions to ask her. What can I do for you? This is what you can do for me. You can ask your son, Marcus, her son, Thomas, Marcus to reach out to Thomas, her son. And after that, I immediately got off the phone and called my friend whose husband was lung cancer. Nikki was a very lucky woman. Her lung cancer was peripheral. They were able to take 2.5 ribs out, and she didn't even have to have chemo. That was 1996. We were all so grateful for that.
What
yes.
a warrior.
Yes.
She's so much fun to talk to. Tim, am I eating up all the time? Does she have a minute to read a little bit? Would you mind reading just a little bit from the book?
Yes, I'll read a little bit from the book.
Okay. Path to Grace, Reimagining the Civil Rights Movement from University Press of Mississippi. Beautiful book. You will love it as you will love Ethel Morgan Smith.
Thank you. This is the very first part of the book, the very first. So the book is structured in a way I tell a story about mine, and then I tell a story about someone I've interviewed. So this is my story as a child. This is called Book Notes. The church ladies' cars were parked in our front yard. They must have come over to help Big Mama quilt, or there could be trouble. I stepped out of the school bus. Big Mama, Miss Pearl, Miss Carrie, and Miss Merle sat around our kitchen table, cleaning up our school books for next term. How come they just can't put the books outside the door? Big Mama asked. They use rags and soapy water, sometimes a spray of bleach, to clean the books up, to get rid of words like good luck niggas written all through them. Sometimes pages would be missing. Big Mom and the church ladies had to fish them out of the trash first. No, they think they're showing their power over us. Miss Pearl pulled out another stack of books toward her. Her arms are almost as long as the table. They just think they scare us. Miss Carrie Mae shook her head. Lord have mercy. They gotta know, they gotta do better than that to scare us. The women just laughed. Change clothes, get your food and eat in the living room, Big Mama ordered my sisters and me. Yes, ma'am, we said. Boxes for school books took up most of the space on the kitchen floor. Stacks of old newspapers blocked the door to the outside. Don't be messing up nothing. No crumbs on the floor either, Big Mama yelled. Yes, ma'am. By the time they finish, the books will be clean, Miss Carrie May tried to whisper. They can wait to know about the cruelty of this world. We heard her. But what I couldn't understand was why did the white people hate us so much? All of us colored people were hard-working Christians. Look what I find. Miss Merle snatched out her small bag, her small purse, with different colors of ink pads, stencils with roses. She used to teach home economics in Clayton until she retired. She knew how to make everything look pretty. When my sisters and I finished eating, we would wrap the books with newspapers that little mama got from the white woman's house. In the front room, Miss Merle stamped different color flowers with her stencils and ink pads. The books were better than they've ever been. The covers looked like flowered newspapers. Red roses were for science books, blue for English, green for math, and yellow for history. The algebra book was so big and heavy, I couldn't wait for the school term to begin. I love all of these books and couldn't wait to dive into them. This part ain't that bad. The insulting part is digging them out of the trash cans. Is that necessary? Power to the pole, Miss Pearl raised her pecan-colored fist above her head. Miss Pearl didn't play, and everybody knew it. When I was six, I had to go to Clayton to get my shots. I rode with her after school. She dropped the students off, and we got in her new shiny car and drove to the clinic. I was a little scared, but she assured me that it was not that big of a deal. She was right. Afterwards, we went to the mall and ate at Shoney's restaurant. It was the first time I had ever eaten at any kind of restaurant. I ordered a big boy, just like Miss Pearl did. Then we went to the learner's shop, and she bought me a blue and white colored seersucker dress. It was the best day of my life. But coming home in the school bus, students would get a little rowdy. Miss Pearl wasn't going to have any of it, and she lit in into them. She didn't allow no fooling around. She kept order like the law. Folks in the community was real proud of her. They said she made all the Negroes be proud. Miss Pearl was always the first driver to get her contract renewed every year. Her clothes were starched and ironed. No matter how warm or wet the weather was, Miss Pearl, you never saw a wrinkle. Miss Pearl's colored blouses and matched shoes, and sometimes she wore pastel-colored shirt-waist dresses. She owned every color and even had penny loafers to match. Folks said she had to go to Montgomery to buy her shoes. She wore a new hairstyle and a new pair of glasses at the beginning of every school year. To keep order on the bus, she assigned one person to open the door in the front and one in the back. One person took names. When Miss Pearl had trouble getting students to settle down, she just started in with her favorite sermon. White folks is probably right in thinking that the colors is crazy and dumb. Here I am, got your lives in the palm of my hand. Lord, Lord, I just don't know. On any given second, all that racket could make me nervous, and I could run off the road and kill everybody in 1 minute flat. She snapped her fingers above her head when she got to that part. My question to you is, why don't you use your big heads for thinking? You in school to get an education, here you're not using your heads. Those big heads ought to be thinking more. She pointed to her head with her left finger like it was a gun. When I grew up, I wished I had the opportunity like y'all. You don't have to work in the fields. You eat three squares every day. And I know, because I know you folks. Most of you don't even do but a little work around the house. Lord, 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 just once, prove the white folks wrong. Think, think, think. She pointed to her head again, this time with a different hand, but she kept her eyes squeezed on the steering wheel. But she never took her eyes off the gravel road. One of these days, I'm going to write a book, and I'm going to call it Niggas is Crazy. I bet all the white folks will buy it, and I'll make a lot of money, and I won't have to think about driving this bus again. the white folks will say, "See, I told you niggas were crazy." Her sermon always worked. Most of the students were asleep by the time she got to part two of proving the white folks wrong. Thank you.
Had it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Ethel Morgan Smith, y'all, A Path to Grace, Reimagining the Civil Rights Movement. The book is chock full of characters, but I got to say Miss Pearl is my favorite. We need more Miss Pearl. I don't know about the title of her book so much, but yeah, you got to keep order. All right, Chelsea Lovett is Nashville-based, Mississippi-born, New Orleans-lived. How about that? Here we go. She, in the true fashion of Thacker Mountain Radio, she was going to come on and play solo, but she went ahead and got a couple of her pals to join her, and that would be Mr. Kenny Kimbrough and Mr. Eric Deaton. Y'all remember them? They've been on the show many times. Yeah, man. Chelsea's releases is Truck Stop Waitress. You can imagine what that's all about. But I love the title of her album. We've all got to get a copy. You had your cake, so lie in it. Y'all, please welcome Chelsea Lovett.
Thank you. So nice to be here. My parents have been listening to this show for years, and pleasure to be on the stage. Thank you. Thank you. Sometimes you need to laugh, so here you go.
I don't understand.
Chelsea, love it, y'all.
Thank y'all.
Thank you, Chelsea. Kenny Kimbrough and Eric Deaton helping out. Chelsea Lovett, thank you so much. We want to remind you that you are listening to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour and a Half. You're hearing us on WUMS, University of Mississippi. Also, WYXR, Community Radio in Memphis, Tennessee. WUTC, University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Hello, Chattanooga. The stations of Mississippi Public Broadcasting, the stations of Alabama Public Radio, WUOT, Knoxville, Tennessee, and KNCE, True Taos Radio in Taos, New Mexico. We appreciate all our listeners. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Dr. Stephen and Gay Case, Larry and Michael Johnson Family Foundation, the Mississippi Arts Commission, R&B Fader Charitable Foundation, the good folks at Square Books, y'all, we love them, Taproot Audio Design, the Lyric Oxford, the University of Mississippi, Visit Oxford, the Yotnawatawpha Arts Council, Benjamin Banahan, Dr. Don and Marianne Frugie, Douglas Vance, Dr. John and Tammy Cook, Dr. Lisa Chandler, Farish Percy and Grant Adams, Jackie Bailey, Leslie Westbrook, Party Waiting to Happen, the Snooky and Mary Lou Williams Foundation, Water Valley, Mississippi. Always good to see you. Tom and Carol Sharp and Wayne and Weta Drinkwater. You too can be a Thacker backer. More info at our website, thackermountain.org. Keon Love, thank you, Keon, the man. All righty, our next guest is Jane Smiley. Her newest book is The Questions That Matter Most. Man, it is a fine one. Let me get this, make sure I get our subtitle. The Questions That Matter Most, Reading and Writing and the Exercise of Freedom. In the book, she turns her attention to writers such as Charles Dickens, Anthony Trollope, Harriet Beecher Stowe, Louisa May Alcott, Mark Twain, who we'll talk about briefly, Franz Kafka, Jessica Medford, and others. She talks about writing and reading and what a joy it is, and also a responsibility to do both. You may recall her novel, A Thousand Acres. And I love the story she tells in the book, A Thousand Acres. And her editor or your agent, one of the others, said, nobody wants to read a book about farming. Well, in 1992, A Thousand Acres won the Pulitzer Prize, ladies and gentlemen, and the National Book Critics Circle Award. That's getting the laugh in a big way. Y'all please welcome Jane Smiley.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
We're running a hair long, so I'm going to ask you quickly about Mark Twain and Huck Finn, and then we will get you to read a little bit from this great book. But you tell in your essay on Twain, you talk about having a broken leg. You've got 3 months you're laid up in the bed.
Uh-huh.
And so you've got a stack of books you're going to read. And you thought to yourself, you know, I haven't read Huck Finn since I was in high school. So you read Huck Finn, and you can't believe how horrible it is.
No,
how can this be the where all American literature comes from?
I didn't
from?
Think it was horrible.
Well, I put words in
I
your
think
mouth.
I think he made a serious error. And the error was, and he knew it. He knew it because when he got to the point where Huck and Jim are going below the Mason-Dixon line, he got stuck, as a lot of writers do, and he put it aside. And then I guess he decided, well, the other book was such a big success, Tom Sawyer, I'll just pull it out and see what happens. And so he kind of pushes Jim aside and changes the theme of the book, and it's very distracting. And I hadn't noticed that when I was reading it in school. And then I picked up a book I'd never read before, which was Uncle Tom's Cabin. And I started reading it, and I loved it. And I especially, I loved the way he depicted Tom, for example, who is a very spiritual person and believes that he's going to get his reward in heaven. He's a true believer. He's a mystic in some ways. And then the female characters, all of whom learn something, and one of whom is very brave and takes her child. She's a slave. She takes her child and she carries him across the Ohio River. And I thought, wow, this is great. And so I wrote Say It Ain't So, Huck. That was the name of the article. And I sent it to, I think it was Harper's. And they bought it, and it earned more hate mail than any article they ever, ever, ever had. And I was so proud of myself.
Yeah, that's a good day at the office.
Yeah.
Well, we want to hear a little bit from the book, if you don't mind. The questions that matter most, reading and writing and an exercise in freedom. And by the way, you make a great point that writing novels is maybe the ultimate freedom, and you've been in this position. You've earned it, of course, but what a great gift to have. Let's hear from the book. Y'all, please welcome again Jane Smiley.
Thank you. I'm going to say that there are two small short stories in the book that never got published anywhere else, and one is about Gregor Samsa, in which he doesn't die, he escapes. And that was a lot of fun to write. And the other one is about Othello, in which Desdemona sends out for some advice from a queen at the time, Marguerite of Navarre. And that was a lot of fun to write, too. So there are those two stories. And all the rest is just me haranguing. So I'm going to read a little bit from the introduction. When I moved to California in 1996, I was following a horse. The horse's name was Terson. I called him Mr. T. I bought him from a stable in Wisconsin in 1993 and kept him in a barn outside Ames, Iowa, where I taught at Iowa State. But I was tired of nearly freezing to death when I rode him in the winter. And by the way, my husband, Steve, who had grown up in Iowa, had spent some time in Santa Barbara and wanted to move back. Eventually, Steve and Mr. T agreed on Carmel Valley, California. I could have said I was a native Californian because I was born in L.A. and my parents lived near Hollywood Park until I was about a year old. Then they moved back to the Midwest. Steve was born in Iowa, Mr. T in Germany, but no matter. Like all migrants to California, we looked around and fell in love instantly with the new landscape and the ever-changing but almost always pleasant weather. At the time, I was known for 1,000 acres and Moo. One of them openly set in Iowa and the other one sort of set in Iowa at a land-grant university. The first thing I did, inspired by Mr. T, was decide that, of course, I could breed racehorses. And I did, though none of them were successful. But Mr. T and the horses I bred gave birth to Horse Heaven. And in order to understand racing and breeding, I took a wonderful tour of California. Del Mar, Santa Anita, Hollywood Park, Golden Gate Fields, Temecula, Coalinga, and Davis, with many stops in between, such as, you know, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Santa Barbara, San Diego. First thing I learned about California was how beautiful it is. The second thing I learned was that the climate and the scenery change every time you turn a corner or go over a mountain. I experienced this not too long ago when I was walking in Monterey, and I left the Del Monte Shopping Center for Don Davi Park. I saw a path that I'd never taken before, and it took me straight into the woods along a creek, natural, chaotic, and messy, not half a mile from the designer handbags at Macy's. So, I enjoyed putting this book together, and if you like some things that are going to make you laugh and also make you really mad, this is the one for you.
Thank you. Jane Smiley, y'all, one more time for it. Thank you so much. You. Make you laugh and make you mad. Thank you so much. Thanks for being here. That was wonderful. And the book, again, is the questions that matter most, reading, writing, and the exercise of freedom. As we mentioned, she covers Charles Dickens. She covers all the Trollope, as we mentioned, Jane Austen. Just a fine book for anybody who's interested in reading and writing. And I'm sure that is everybody in this room and listening in our audience, because that's what we do here. Thank you so much, Jane. It was great. Jane and Ethel will join us after the show, sign copies of their books, and visit with us. And we appreciate both of them being here. Very delightful. Thanks a lot, Jane. Very nice. Thank you. All right. Bill and Shai Perry, they've been on the show numerous times. We consider them family. Speaking of family, they recently lost their dad, the blues man Bill Hallin Mad Perry. And in the last couple of months, y'all have been keeping his memory alive, keeping his legacy going, and actually perform a little tribute to him when you go out and play gigs. And I believe you're going to do that very thing right here with us tonight. We're so glad y'all are here. Please welcome Bill and Shai Perry.
Thank you. Thank you. We're very happy to be here. And like he said, we are our dad's legacy. That's our beautiful mom, Pauline Perry, sitting right over there. Thank you. And we are going to do some of his songs, well, three of his songs. I wish we could do more. And one of the things I want to say before we get started is that he's on, actually, the blues marker on the square for different things that he's accomplished in his life. And he's on two other blues markers for keeping the word juke alive. And that's one of the songs that we'll do today. But I have to say, we do have an honorable mention on that on that marker.
If you look real closely.
Real close.
Real closely.
Make sure you get a magnifying glass or something. We're there. We're there.
Hey. Been a little fancy for y'all. Excuse me.
Joints be jumping, y'all. Two joints be jumping. We be a jukin'. band juking, y'all. Juking and a jamming. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Shai Perry. My brother Bill Perry, my mother Pauline Perry, and my dad watching over us, Bill Howlin' Mad Perry. We'll do one more for you. Time flies when you're having fun. I got a story I'm gonna tell. Down in Mississippi, the blues is doing well. Drinking and gambling in the jukes all night. The catfish and chicken wings, they're out of sight. 'Cause that's the way, y'all. That's the way of the blues. That's the way, y'all. That's the way of the blues. When we're having this much fun, tell me how can you lose? From all over the world, the people they come down to Mississippi where the blues was born. We played the blues both day and night. We won't stop, not even for a fight. 'Cause that's the way, y'all. That's the way of the blues. That's the way, y'all. That's the way of the blues. When you're having this much fun, tell me how can you lose? Oh, tell me.
Bill and Shai Perry, y'all, one more time for them. Very nice. Mrs. Pauline Perry, also very nice to have you with us tonight. Thank you so much. Beautiful, beautiful family. They have a blues market right here on the square in Oxford. And, of course, Howlin' Mad Perry, among his many talents, was being an instructor. He was a teacher over at the Clarksdale Blues Museum. And one of his students was Kingfish. Chris Stone, Kingfish Ingram. Y'all remember Kingfish, one of our favorites? Kingfish is going to be on 60 Minutes this week. So there's a program note. You're doing a whole thing on Clarksdale, so that'll be interesting. Hey, thank y'all so much for being here. We've had a big time. One more time for all our guests, if you don't mind. Ethel Morgan Smith, Path of Grace. Jane Smiley, The Questions That Matter Most. Chelsea Lovett, You've Made Your Cake, Now Lie in It. And, of course, Bill and Shai Perry. Thank y'all for being here. We're down to our last three shows, y'all. We need you every week. We will be at the Lyric next week. So we look forward to packing that place out and having y'all come visit us at the Lyric next week. We're going to get one more song from this Yalla Busha big band. We love them, y'all. We will see y'all on the radio.
April 9th, the Hush Puppy Music Co-op presents a double bill of rock and roll in Greenwood, Mississippi with Memphis-based Heartbreak Hill. Also from Florence, Alabama, Carver Commodore. That's 7 p.m. at the Old City Hall, 121 Main Street in Greenwood, Mississippi. Tickets are $10 at the door. The Hush Puppy Music Co-op is dedicated to bringing diverse sounds to the Mississippi Delta. This ad was underwritten by the Greenwood Convention and Visitors Bureau. We'll see you in the Delta on April 9th.
Thacker Mountain Radio Hour's executive director is Amanda Weimer. Our production director is Tim Lee. Our broadcast and post-production engineer is Jeffrey Reed. Our front-of-house engineer is Blake Gardner.
Break, baby. I think I'll pack my bags and head that way. As soon as the weather breaks, baby, I think I'll pack my bags and head that way. Just want you to be nice to a friend until I can see.